In the Moment is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 26th to 28th in Spearfish.
What is the longest sit-in in American history? From SDPB, today is Thursday, July 24th. This is In the Moment. In 1977, disability rights activists occupied the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare in San Francisco. They were calling for legislation that would help disabled Americans have equal rights and equal access. Then in 1990, the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law. In 2025, South Dakotans get ready to celebrate 35 years of the ADA. We'll talk about the history and the work that still needs to be done. Plus, the Montrose Music Festival kicks off this week. Singer-songwriters and musicians from across the country take the road to Montrose. Matt Faulkner joins us with the music and the message. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're In the Moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The Americans with Disabilities Act turns 35 this week. The legislation is a hallmark civil liberties story. It includes record-breaking sit-ins, public protests, and the voluntary use of disabled bodies as disruption, as was the case when people abandoned assisted devices such as wheelchairs to crawl up the steps of government buildings in an effort to demonstrate the challenges of access. For a preview of the ADA Festival in Sioux Falls on July 26th, we invited Vicki Stewart and Nathan Stalinga to the program. Stewart is Executive Director of Employment Disability Resources. Stalinga is Executive Director of Dakota Abilities. All right, Vicki, let's talk about ADA at 35 years. This is a big celebration. Help us understand the significance of this legislation, first of all.
Sure. Basically, the Americans with Disabilities Act is a civil rights law to prevent discrimination against people with disabilities, of any type of disability, whether that be hidden or visible disabilities. And really, it prohibits discrimination in the workplace, in public places, in places, hotels, restaurants, any place that anyone else should have access to.
What? So all of us here are of an age where this passed in 1990. We're hitting our 20s around then, not to date us all. But that means for most of your entire childhood until the time you're 20, Vicki, and you've used a wheelchair since you were how old?
All my life.
All your life. And so most of that time, you lived without this. Were you aware that there was a change and a shifting political wind in 1990?
Yeah, I really was. I was in college at the time, and I don't remember the specific date and the signing, but I remember that that's really when I started advocating for myself, was when I was in college, because it really hit me as an adult that there were places that I couldn't go to and that that was wrong. And so really we had a group together on campus and we fought to make things more accessible. So the ADA was huge for us.
Yeah. Nathan, tell me a little bit about how you got into this line of work. And now you're Executive Director of Dakota Abilities. How did you get there?
You know, it was really just a chance stop at what at that time was Sioux Vocational, and fell in love with it. And 33 years later, it's what I'm still doing. And, you know, when you look back at the changes, certainly 35 years since ADA, and I look at it when I'm giving tours in particular at Dakota Abilities at the Longfellow Center, and when I'm with someone who's older, and we look at how society's changed certainly through this. Typically, when someone's older, they look at the ground because, frankly, they're embarrassed the way the society where people with disabilities should go.
Right.
And really, back then, it was before that time, it was send them away and forget about them. And we saw things like the state institution, Redfield. And then you look at people of in this room's age, and you maybe started to see some inclusion in schools. But when I give someone a tour at Longfellow, we support a lot of people. 80% of our folks have a power wheelchair. And you see some of the equipment, and that's really what they see. And they're trying to figure out in their mind, how do you navigate the community? How do you get to your house? How do you do those things? And then I'll have a younger group come in, our kids and younger, and they see the person because they've had opportunities in conversation, and it's just much more natural. And it's really a powerful thing to see firsthand.
Yeah, I was doing some of the research, Vicki, on what the before was, and was deeply moved by the work to get the legislation in place. And also, you know, you and I went to, if I may tell people, elementary school together. And so I was surprised because you were a kid in my kindergarten class. And when I saw this notion of institutionalizing, sterilizing, like all these different things that were happening in the 1900s through like the 70s, I was a little appalled at that history. What can you help us understand about the history of disability in America that stands out to you, whether it's in the, you know, before times or just the activism that happened in order to get to ADA?
Yeah, I really think that before, people with disabilities were looked at a medical problem to be solved. So that's why they sent people to institutions to be taken care of. Again, like Nathan said, you know, out of sight, out of mind kind of mentality. And I think we had some advocates who maybe didn't have disabilities when this all started. But then I think people with disabilities really realized that nothing's going to change unless we speak up for ourselves, because we have powerful stories to tell. And coming directly from people with disabilities, it makes more of an impact. So people with disabilities got together and fought hard. They crawled up the stairs of the Capitol in D.C. to make a point that this law needed to be passed.
Yeah. Got out of their chairs and crawled with their hands, dragging themselves up the stairs. I watched that video this morning. I'm still not quite over it. The longest sit-in in American history, if the information I found this morning was correct, was people with disabilities who had occupied a federal building. The 504 protests, that's what that was in 1977. And then in 1990, 30,000 activists across the nation trying to get this legislation signed by George H.W. Bush.
Yes, yeah. Super powerful.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal. It's not necessarily something that I had ever learned when you study civil rights activism.
Yeah, we don't hear a lot about that history, and that's really why we want to put an emphasis on that for the 35th anniversary, because I think really the public needs to know the history and where we've come from.
So you're having a party.
We're having a big party.
Tell me about the party. Tell me about the festival.
All right. It's really cool because it's being held on July 26th, which is actually the day the ADA was signed. Yeah. So we are having a big festival at Levitt at the Falls from 5 to 9:30 that evening. We're going to have food trucks, vendors, interactive art. All of the performers are people with disabilities because we really want to showcase that people with disabilities belong on the stage like everyone else, and they have talents and gifts just like everyone else as well.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the work that you do in South Dakota right now. Tell me, Vicki, about your organization that deals really with employment, as I understand it.
Right. We're a nonprofit, Employment Disability Resources, and our mission is to provide businesses with education, awareness, and resources to promote employment of people with disabilities. And unfortunately, the unemployment rate for people with disabilities is double that of people without disabilities. So we know we have a lot of work to do yet. And we are really there to help businesses recruit people with disabilities and to retain their employees with disabilities, because we're the largest minority group in the world. And so when you think of it that way, you probably have a family member, a friend, or a coworker with a disability. And it's a group that anybody can join at any time through an accident, injury, disease.
Illness, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what does ADA require? What are some of the basic tenets of the Americans with Disabilities Act?
To provide equal access in employment, public spaces, transportation, really all aspects of society.
Yeah. What would you add to that, Nathan, as far as how it's implemented here at home?
You know, accessibility is huge. And there are things that most of us take for granted on the ability to get to and from somewhere rather quickly, whether that's to work or school or to an entertainment function. So what transportation is available? And then when you get there, how accessible is it to get on location? You know, what are the curb cutouts that you see on the corners or ramps into the building if it's not at ground floor? And even something as simple as the stoop of a door and having to get over that. Again, there are things that we take for granted every day.
Their lived experience. All right. Yeah. And, you know, you said not all disabilities are visible, of course. But, you know, since you use a wheelchair, tell us a little bit about some of the things that you have had to overcome, the obstacles. Have they improved? Tell me a little bit about pre-1990, some of the challenges that you had. And then have you seen differences?
Yeah. Back in the day, I would say there were definitely fewer accessible parking spots, definitely less curb cuts. And now, you know, with the street crossing, we have the audible signals, which is super helpful for people. Ramps into businesses, I see more and more of that. New buildings, they know what is required now, so they can start off on the right track and do things right the first time.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because if it's not an afterthought, when the Longfellow location, that's the former school, right?
Yep.
It's a former elementary school. When that was designed, that might have been before you were there, but as you look around architecturally, what are some of the plans that were put into that building to accommodate the future of that space?
So Longfellow itself, the building was an elementary school for 100 years.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons the Sioux Falls School District closed it, there were changes in neighborhoods, makeups also, but ADA compliance issues was one of the top reasons the school district was getting rid of the building. And a group of 80% of their folks who utilize, who are non-ambulatory, buys it. And I always appreciate a good laugh or giggle when I say that, because it took some vision. I was there when it started.
You were?
And actually, we had been building some houses at the time and we knew we needed more space for our day services. And having parents who were both in the Sioux Falls School District working, I was familiar with the building.
Mm-hmm.
I always say I pulled over and called our executive director at that time and said I found our new home when the school district announced they were going to sell it. Some of the things that we did were improved doorways. So automatic openers with door handles or buttons that allow the person to independently enter and exit. We installed an elevator. The building did not, it has a lower level. It didn't have an elevator. We installed an elevator. So some small things like that, doorways we widened where we could. But really, the building has been such a blessing for us in big, wide hallways and classrooms that allow independent supports to be set up for people. But it certainly took a vision to identify with the architect to say, here's how this will work.
Here's what's possible.
Here's what's possible, absolutely.
So one of the fears that businesses often have, Vicki, from either hiring or renovating, is that this is going to be expensive. Help us understand, is renovating or looking at your business, especially if you have an older building, always an expensive venture to make it ADA compliant?
It's not always. No, there are tax incentives available to businesses to make their businesses more accessible. And I think a lot of times people aren't aware of that. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that we can provide to businesses as a resource. I also think that they think they're going to have to pay a lot to accommodate the person to be able to thrive in the workplace. And that's not true either. Typically, an accommodation costs $300 or less. And the majority of the time, it's no cost at all to provide a reasonable accommodation.
So how do you recruit people? What is the way to recruit and to let people know that, hey, we're hiring, and by the way, we want you to apply?
Right. I would say get connected with agencies in our community and nonprofit organizations that work with job seekers. Mm-hmm. There is a whole group of people with untapped talent. And so I think if we can connect businesses to those organizations that work directly with job seekers, that definitely helps. I think, you know, connecting with EDR, we're here to help. We're here to make those connections. You probably, again, know someone in your neighborhood or a coworker. Give that person a chance. You know, be open to that.
Yeah. Talk about retention.
Retention. You know, a lot of times a person acquires a disability. So maybe they've worked at a place for 20 years and they have a stroke. So if they're a good employee, the business wants to keep them, right? So again, there's accommodations out there to enable that person to continue working and be productive.
Yeah. What accommodations, what kind of accommodations are reasonable? Where do people start having that conversation?
Yeah, we always talk about the interactive process. Talk directly to the employee with the disability to see what their needs are, because a lot of times they have their own accommodation already that they can bring to the workplace. Mm. And I think, you know, just flexible work schedule, that's the most requested reasonable accommodation among people with disabilities and without disabilities. Maybe you need to go to your weekly psychiatrist appointment. Maybe you need to do physical therapy a few times a week. But if you can have that flexible work schedule, you can do both and be successful.
What is the work that still needs to be done? 35 years later, Nathan, what are you seeing in real life that you say that is still, we have a long ways to go and this is it?
You know, I see education, and really that's one of the core values for Dakota Abilities is educating the community on people's abilities. And while that may sound pretty basic and simple, it's really opportunity that you give people to interact, to learn from each other. You know, some of the things may be, an accommodation may be as simple as having enough of a turning radius in a room mm-hmm. for someone to turn their chair. And it really is just kind of your setup of furniture. You know, we certainly see a lot more, you know, everyone talks about an autism spectrum and how do you handle that? It's seeing the person and not mm-hmm. the disability. And in time that happens, it's easy for some people to judge or wonder why that person is here. But they're no different than anyone else. They're just trying to partake in that community life, and given the opportunities, they'll be there and they'll thrive. That's what we try and provide people. South Dakota is pretty fortunate in the services that they have for adults with intellectual disabilities. There are 21 community support providers now in the state of South Dakota, who really work together to advocate with our legislature, and they do a nice job of listening and participating and understanding what our needs are, as does the state.
We've heard there's been some funding crunches with some of those places. They've cut back services, and there's some challenges right now. But does that ring true for you?
You know, you're a nonprofit. That funding is always going to be difficult. We're 96% dependent on Medicaid funding. And so when you look at that level, things are tight. Our money is where it needs to be. 90% of our funds go towards direct care staff, the person working directly with the individual who has identified what supports they need to make them successful, and that's where our dollars go.
Mm. So Medicaid cuts coming on the horizon. Are you concerned? 96% of your funding comes from Medicaid?
There are a lot of areas of Medicaid, and certainly the support that we provide and what Vicki's doing is a mandatory thing to the state of South Dakota. And so we're doing the state's work. Federally, they're mandated to provide supports, and they contract with us versus having state programs. And so they find the most efficient ways to do it. It's a great use of tax dollars. If you look what the cost is for an individual to be supported by the state or by an outside the state organization and what community support providers are paid on a daily rate, it's a significant savings in taxpayer dollars, millions and millions of dollars every year in savings by the work that's done by your friends and neighbors.
Yeah. Vicki, what is the work that needs to be done?
We still have a long way to go with employment. I think that, again, like Nathan said, people tend to look at the disability and not the ability of people. And what we find is that actually people with disabilities, once they find a job, they actually have a very high retention rate because oftentimes they have to struggle to find employment. So once they find a good fit, they're going to stay there for many years. And I think people forget about the creativity that people with disabilities have too, just to live our daily lives. We have to think differently. We have to think outside the box. And people with disabilities bring that to the workplace too.
Problem solving.
Exactly. It's huge. Yes.
All right. What else do you want to help people understand here?
I think part of it for them on the employment side is they make some of the best coworkers anyone will ever have. And when to the person when we ask staff, why do you work here? It's always, it's about the people. Mm-hmm. It's the person. And I think people find that in their coworkers as well. It's someone who actually is interested when they say, how was your day? It's actually, they want an answer, and it isn't just a passing of, hey, how are you today? I'm fine. And you keep on with your day. But as far as loyalty to a company, people make great employees.
We make great employees.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you want to wrap up with, Vicki? Anything you want people to know?
Yeah. And I always say, you know, with the Americans with Disabilities Act, it doesn't just affect people with disabilities. Yeah. Think how convenient curb cuts are for people pushing their child in a stroller. Mm-hmm. Think of the lower tables at restaurants. I hear all the time, you know, the majority of the tables are the higher cocktail tables. And the aging population, that's difficult for them to climb up on those taller chairs. Mm-hmm. People who are deaf, they were talking about closed captioning. That benefits people who are deaf, but we all enjoy that. If we're on a Zoom call, I a lot of times put the closed captioning on. It's just easier. It's easier for people with learning disabilities. Audiobooks, they were invented for people who were blind. And now think of all of us who use those.
While you're driving.
Yeah. Creating a better world.
For everyone.
With diversity. That's
exactly.
The example of a diverse world. It ends up being a better world for everyone. The ADA Festival is scheduled for July 26th in Sioux Falls. It commemorates the 35th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. If you live in a small town with at least 2 grocery stores, our next guest says you should head out of town with your wallet full and your fuel low. Spend your money in a small town, Matt Fockler says, because small town South Dakotans already do a lot to support sales tax receipts in the cities. For local summer festivals, might we suggest Montrose? Matt Fockler is a musician and founder of the Montrose Music Festival. This is year 5.
Yeah.
What's different about this year?
I got carried away, and we have like more
big.
Music in 3 days than the Levitt has all summer, so it's going to be a phenomenal year to show up in the campground, because the song circles are going to be full of amazing singer-songwriter national acts.
Yeah,
we really don't hire any bands. We got one full band playing in the Legion for our Saturday night dance, which is the Marksman. And the one local guy that plays with them has Sunset Pawn here in town.
Okay.
Rick
yeah.
Stoops is probably one of our best fiddle players in the state. Yeah. And so it's his little crew going to come in and do our country and western dance. And Johann Wagner, who was here last year,
yeah.
He's doing a free western swing dance class ahead of the show, so you can come and learn how to dance before the show happens.
Nice.
And everything else is solo, singer-songwriter, acoustic music.
Yeah.
So we amped up. We usually just do one ticketed show on Saturday night, and the rest is free in the campground. This year we have, I call them listening rooms. A lot of people ain't familiar with a listening room, but it's about the lyrics and the story. And so we're really particular about everybody just shut up and listen. So we have 3 songwriters for each one. Friday night is Texas artists, and I'm a little mushy in the head, so I'm not sure I can name everything. But we have three just Butch Morgan, who plays often with Butch Hancock with the Flatlanders. He plays lead with some of the best artists in Texas. He'll be here all weekend singing his songs and friends' songs. George Ensley, all 3 of these are elders, older, seasoned singer-songwriters from Texas, as well as Frank Gilligan, who's I'm excited to have in Montrose because he does a lot of Irish, and he's Irish, and we're an Irish town, so it'll be great to have Frank here.
Nice.
And them 3 are Friday night.
Okay.
And again, the Marksman and Rich Show, who's my favorite local artist, is opening for the Marksman. And then Sunday is all female artists with Megan B., mm-hmm. Karen Mall, and Libby Kirkpatrick. All phenomenal in their own right. Great singer-songwriters. Libby, I've been begging her for a long time to come to Montrose. She quit a little frustrated with the music business and all that, like trying to make any kind of eke out a living out there. Yeah. She had a son. She quit touring, raised her son, and her kid's old enough. I finally got her to come this year. The last record she was on, she has Lyle Lovett's big band on it. She's won about every songwriting contest in the United States, like the Bluegrass Festival out of Colorado. It's a world-renowned songwriting contest, and you win like a $7,000 guitar if sure. you win it. She's won it three times. she's won the Kerrville Folk Festival songwriting contest and a bunch of others. She just, before she quit, everybody wanted her playing music. Mm-hmm. She hasn't played for a long time, and I talked her into coming, and she put a tour out. And just to get here, she went to the Oregon Country Fair, which is a lot of our friends go to, and it's okay. just, it's an underground, just an amazing festival. She's played that, and now she's in a rental car working her way across Montana and South Dakota from the other side of the state on her way here.
Wow.
I'm really excited to have Libby here.
Yeah. That's one of the fun things you mentioned, one of the reasons I enjoy interviewing artists who are coming through is that those road stories. You all get together,
yeah.
Something happened on the way to get to the festival.
Well, and that we've put together this theme deal that I'm working on, this long-term coast-to-coast dream of mine, that it's nothing new, it's just me trying to implement the way Canada does music versus the United States.
Okay.
Canada, they work together. They all all the festivals tell each other who they're hiring. So instead of hiring different artists, they all work together and they figure out how to eliminate windshield time for all the musicians.
Okay.
So if the East Coast is hiring somebody, then all the festivals across the whole country hire that person so that they have this road that takes the work off of the plate of the individual independent artist.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to, we call it the Road to Montrose, and that's all advertised on our website. So not only can you see who's playing our festival, but you can see everywhere they're playing from leaving their house to Montrose and back to their house. So if you can't see them at our festival, you can see everywhere they're playing and still catch them here locally.
Yeah.
I think we have five artists that are block booked, which is something that I'm doing with this Road to Montrose, where there's five artists playing Montrose and the Sioux River Folk Festival the following
okay.
weekend.
Okay.
So we
yeah.
got Mark Stewart, who is Steve Earle's brother-in-law, playing Montrose. And he's playing like the Salem Brewery. He's got some different stuff in our area. And then right after Montrose, he's here all week. He
yeah.
gets to experience South Dakota. He gets yeah. to build his followers so that when he comes through off the in the off season, he's got people who know him personally because he comes to Montrose every year.
Right.
He played in the Dukes for a decade. One of the most most amazing lead guitar players I've ever met. His covers are identical to what the record he's covering is. And he's teaching a lead guitar class at our festival for $30.
Yeah.
And all of that, we don't take any percentage from the artist if they're selling merch. all their merch money goes to them. If they're teaching a class, if you buy a $30 ticket, it all goes to Mark. We're promoting community, so we're going to find a way to pay for it besides taking it out of the artist's pocket, where a lot of people, they eke out these little chunks from artists. And to me, I'm like, it's the artists who need help, not, you know. So we're really pushing to represent community and to keep what I'm advertising or pushing even with the artists is we would like you to have a South Dakota vacation and come and play Montrose, the Sioux River Folk Festival, and the Rhythm of the River in Jackson, Minnesota. We book you at all three festivals, and then you play all of our local venues in between these festivals on days that the festivals, you know, Monday through Thursday, artists can't find places to play, and venues are trying to figure out how to fill their seats. So if we can create this buzz that every year around Montrose, Rhythm of the River, and the Sioux River Folk Festival, if the local venues hire our artists, they get a way better price because they're already here and just need a little extra gas money or a place to stay. And then you, the venues, we can fill up their weeknights when they can't get anybody into their into their businesses. Yeah. So it's slowly working, and this year we've got a lot more people that have jumped into this road to Montrose, quote-unquote. And then we got Charlie Roth out of Minnesota who lines a whole bunch of shows up with a bunch of our national acts all through Minnesota, and they all end up in Montrose. Yeah. So we got Dan Raza, who's from England, unbelievable artist that I never could afford at Montrose, but because of this road to Montrose, it works out because there's enough gigs all in a row that our measly little paycheck adds up. And it, they love it because of the community part of it. They get to know my community, and we feed them home-cooked country food, all hand-cooked by farm wives and my high school cooks from school are making our lunches for everybody. Yeah. So Montrose is very personal, and we don't hire artists that come, play their set, and leave. We require them to hang out all weekend and just get to know our community, and the community can get to know them, and it just makes the music experience more of a personal thing.
Yeah, yeah. And the stories and the songs that they're telling and the intimacy of the song circle.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about etiquette. If someone's new to the festival, they want to go listen, what's the best way to do that? What are some of the things that they need to know?
Sure. That's pretty easy. There's always a lot of questions surrounding that. And people continue, even if I explain it, have questions until they show up. And then if you show up, you get it, and you will come back because it's, it's an experience you're not going to find anywhere else besides probably Kerrville, Texas, which is an 18-day music festival that we're sort of based after, and I've worked for 15 years. So when you come, first thing I suggest is bring a camp chair and then wear a shirt that represents your either your hometown, where you live, or your state. Because when you're walking around, everybody to see how big our small community really is during this festival, how many states are in Montrose for this community festival. And on the back of our shirts this year, it says community is bigger than one town. Last year it said the best things in life happen off the clock. You know, we're just trying to get rid of the clock at Montrose and have conversations and build relationships and have a community event that ain't interrupted by, oh, it's 1 o'clock, I want to go see so-and-so. Well, you can see so-and-so anytime you want. Walk around the campground and find them, and you can pick out any artist and listen to them all day if you want. And you can sit beside them and share your songs with them and learn if you're a songwriter from them. They'll sit under a shade tree and talk about songwriting or talk about touring or how you can get involved if that's what you want to do. And you can do this without a cost of just walking around the campground. So if you bring a chair, the etiquette is if you're a listener, if you want to listen, move your chair up close to one of the half a dozen circles we got. And if you want to visit, scoot back 20, 30 feet and right. be aware of your surroundings and don't talk over the music.
Yeah.
And then each circle, there's only two rules. Anybody that plays an acoustic guitar, bring it with. If you play one cover and you've never played in front of people, we have all of our artists are encouraging. There's no pressure of sitting next to a national act. These people have all been beginners too. Mm-hmm. And they're more than willing to make it a comfortable situation. So our two rules are one song at a time and clockwise. That way everyone gets to tell their story. Everyone gets to play their song, whether you're a little kid. There's little kids that sit down and play. Some of them sing an a cappella song that's a cover. It don't matter what you do. If you want to sit down, you're playing in the same circles as the national acts. Instead of them being backstage or in the green room or up on a stage that's separate from you, all our artists are in the campground, available to the general public all weekend long.
Yeah.
So we really are trying to draw out closet musicians, you know. Yeah. In the Midwest, there's so many great players that never take their guitar out of the house. And so we're trying to create this atmosphere where you get to be in the same places as the national acts. And, yeah. and they get to hear your songs, you get to hear theirs, and have conversations about what comes up in between.
What makes a good song? When you're sitting around, what makes a great song? When you're sitting and listening in a song circle and you hear something new, what gets to you? Where you sit and say, yeah, that was it.
I can Google anybody's song anytime. I'll pass on the songs. I want to hear the story.
Okay.
What made you write the song?
Oh,
and that's the
I
best
see what
part.
You're
Everybody
okay.
will,
yeah.
a lot of times, singer-songwriters particularly, they'll share why they wrote the song. And you get this story before you hear the song, and it helps you apply it to your own life, you know. And that's
okay.
part of the trick in writing a song is not getting too compartmentalized in writing something that people can relate to. And so when you get that story ahead of time, that's what's cool. You get to know the artist. You get to know a little bit about where the song come from, so you can relate to it better,
okay.
and you get to know each other. So it's more about building relationships than music, and getting rid of these walls that we have between towns. Like
yeah.
we all got very few community events left, and if we were quick. Often to support our own town's community event, but then maybe because the neighboring town beat us in football, we don't go to their event. Well, the more we support community events, the more money we have to put on a better event for you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We're hearing that again and again, and I don't want to talk about politics, but just the pressures on rural South Dakotans in healthcare and education and, you know, finding funding and arts festivals and just how hard it can be to live in a town. And what I'm hearing you say, and you always make me remember, is just how the community is still there and people are still connecting with each other and solving problems and
yeah.
trying to figure out the next thing.
Well, and you help remind me, like, you get in on camera, you know, live,
yeah.
and you forget a lot of stuff. But the main point that I'm trying to highlight with this community event is that, you know, all of us rural towns, any small town outside of Sioux Falls, we all work in Sioux Falls. We pay taxes in Sioux Falls, buy our clothes, our food, our gas most of the time. We all come to town and spend our money.
Mm-hmm.
This town used to be basically dead downtown. Now it's
yeah.
just, it's oozing in culture and
yeah.
wonderful stuff. And there's, you know, a lot of money in Sioux Falls, while all these little rural towns, we can't even fix the potholes in our streets. We don't have business because we've just lost all our business. We're losing grocery stores, swimming pools, gas stations, and these sleepy little towns who don't even have our community events anymore, and we don't have anywhere that we can even speak to each other. We're just a little sleepy town.
Mm-hmm.
So I always encourage, if you live in a town anywhere, I'm not just talking about small town South Dakota, but if you live in a town that's got two grocery stores, then I just encourage you to leave town once a week with an empty tank of gas and fill your tank in a rural town. buy a meal in a rural town, ask your server where to get fresh eggs and produce. All that stuff is, there's this buzz about how expensive eggs are. They're not expensive in the country. Just you just got to take a drive and make it an adventure. Drive out in the country and find a little town. And you not, of course I want everybody to come to Montrose. We got a great cafe that makes from scratch amazing food, and it's a very clean restaurant. It's a phenomenal place to eat. We got a bar that serves really good food too, and that's basically all we got. And the gas station that we have in town has the owners used to own our grocery store, so they have just the basics in there, yeah. But enough to be able to fuel up. Just leave town once a week and eat somewhere rural and buy eggs. And there's all kinds of the farmer's market in town. That's all coming from outside of town. And all you got to do is drive out there and spend your money there. And it would make a huge difference in these small towns that are falling apart.
Well, 5 years ago, remember people from Sioux Falls were going to small towns to buy their toilet paper when they couldn't find it in Sioux Falls. So guess what? We know you can do it. We know you can get
it. You
already know where to go.
Yeah. I don't think people are avoiding small towns.
No.
It's just there's such Sioux Falls, what I love is there's a restaurant from all over the world. You can eat so many different foods from all over the place, African food and just Italian and all these different great places in Sioux Falls. But it ain't the same as a small town, particularly cafes have gone away. Like even Rosie's here in town is relocated into a small rural town. Unless you go to like Perkins or Frying Pan, it's almost impossible to find eggs, bacon, and hash browns anymore. Mm-hmm. The cafes have gone away. We got a cafe in Montrose, and you can get eggs and bacon and hash browns. Try to find it. I mean, unless you go to the Frying Pan, it's gone. There's no small cafes anymore. They're out there rurally, but in Sioux Falls, if you want eggs and bacon, you got to go to a corporate breakfast place. Mom and pop places if they're there, I'd love holler at me. I'm easy to find. I want to know because I love finding eggs and bacon.
I love it. Will you play for us today?
Sure. This is what I always start with. I play it everywhere I go because it's a friend of mine who's from Texas. Wanted to be a rock star, released a bunch. His alter ego was named Fosco Jones. And then he found Jesus and went to seminary, and he's a Methodist pastor in San Antonio. He plays music in church, but he don't do records and tour or none of that anymore. So I'm keeping this song alive because it fits. Everybody can understand. Old School Friends is what it's called. Scattered, I thought they would stick together. I was always on the outside looking in. My friends misunderstood me. I was kind of weird and in a way uninvited. I was trying to fit in. My friends is on the sidelines and our team was doing well. The cheerleaders flashed, the colors black gold. Hell, what an awkward time it was. I caught my first nicotine buzz underneath the bleachers with the bad kids, my friends. Hell, I'm driving by the place we used to hang out, my friends. not dressed in suits, some dead or stuck behind the counter, the fast food going nowhere west of Winston. My friends got jobs and married, some bought houses in the suburbs, a dog, a cat, Princeton yard, and a couple of kids. My friends to church on Sunday, and then back to work on Monday, fighting traffic every morning, 8 a.m. It's funny how the time goes by, faster as the time goes by. I said goodbye before I got the chance to know my friends. Hell, I wonder what you're doing these days, my friends. And I'm driving we used to hang out, my friends. My friends are getting older, bald and gray, not as pretty as the high school yearbook pictures taken of them. Yeah, my friends, their little memories help make up my mind to leave, and the reasons that I'm coming back again. Hell, should my old acquaintances be forgotten and never brought to mind? Hell, I hope that I see you all someday, somewhere further on. Graduation day, we didn't have that much to say, we didn't know each other much at all. Well, I didn't think and I didn't care, in a hurry to get away from there, I left before I got the chance to know my friends. Well, it's old familiar faces and names.
Montrose Music Festival begins Thursday. Find more online at montrosemusicfestival.org. And that is our show for today. We hope that it served you. In the Moment is produced by Ari Youngeman and Ellen Kester. I'm your host, Lori Walsh. From all of us here at STPB, we thank you for listening.